Well, let's continue our discussion of congregational autonomy. It is a hallmark of the church, and it's something that is terribly rare in the religious community that we know anything about. We talked a little bit about how Jesus is the head of the universal church, that universal church that's written in heaven, the universal church that doesn't do anything on this earth. We talked about how he is also the head of local congregations. And in those local congregations, he's delegated authority to certain individuals, but he did not delegate authority in that heavenly church. We talked about the fact that there were no inter or we tonight we're going to talk about the fact that there were no inter-church alliances that existed between New Testament churches. No organic relationship between them. Now, multiple churches did the same thing, but when those multiple churches did the same thing, they each did it themselves. Because one of the things that we noted about the local church is that it is entirely sufficient in and of itself to accomplish the work that God wants it to do. Now, that doesn't mean that because God wants us to support the preaching of the gospel, we will have the means to do that to the extent that we perhaps would like to do it. But we have the ability to support the preaching of the gospel, to care for those who are among us who have need. But we don't need anything other than the local church. Okay? And we read about multiple churches supporting the Apostle Paul while he preached in Corinth. Somebody want to read 1 Corinthians, the 11th chapter, or excuse me, 2 Corinthians, the 11th chapter, and verse 8.
I robbed other churches by receiving support from them so as to serve you.
Okay, so what do you see there? What's Paul telling the Corinthians?
He got other means of support from other churches.
Right. And we know if we read more in the book of 2 Corinthians, he preached freely when he was in Corinth. Now, we know that at least part of the time when he was preaching in Corinth, he worked as a tent maker, joined Aquila and Priscilla and made tents. That was a skill that he had been taught. Young Jewish rabbis were always taught a skill. Okay? That it wasn't unusual for them to be able to support themselves. Yeah, Eileen.
That word instead of I just thought that was kind of every time I read that I robbed other churches. Nice.
That's an interesting word, isn't it? I robbed other
Because
churches.
he worked and he preached freely and
Right. Right. Why do you think he would use that word?
I know he did it well. This says free of charge, but if he robbed other churches, he must have had some, I mean, I know he didn't literally rob other churches.
Yeah. Not robbery the way we think of robbery sometimes, where he broke in and took whatever they had. Yeah. But why do you think he would use that word? Yeah, Carol?
Well, it sort of implies that maybe they should have stepped up and offered something for the preaching of the gospel. I mean that's what it indicates to me, that even though he gave it freely, that he was worthy of his hire, and in order to preach there, others congregations were supporting him, and they weren't doing really what they should have done as they learned the message.
Yeah.
The reality to me is that Paul would teach or preach whether he got paid or not.
Good point.
And the idea of taking funds from somewhere else would be robbery, because they could have used those funds to support someone else or something else.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. Paul did it of his, Paul preached of his own free will. He said, the love of Christ constrains me. So Paul, I really like the point. Paul would have preached whether he was paid or not. And he wanted to preach in Corinth without being paid to make a point that he preached freely. And the Corinthians turned that against him and said, well, he knows what his preaching is worth, because the typical way that things happen was people would preach so that they could have a job. And they were saying, no, Paul, you know what your preaching's worth, so you do it for free. Yeah, Mandy, did you have a question, comment?
Loosely the same thing. When I read that, I've always thought of like the saying, robbing Peter to pay Paul. It's the idea that the churches there would have been supporting someone in that work. And in this case, they're continuing to support him through his work.
Okay, good point. Yeah, Bill?
I think Paul felt he owed everything to God, and nobody owed him anything, especially the people he had tried to destroy. And that he shouldn't have to take anything from them.
Yeah, that probably figured into the way that he chose that word. Well, he describes himself as the chiefest of sinners. So, yeah, there's some value there. The point is that other churches joined together in supporting Paul, but there was no organic relationship between those other churches. Each church sent funds to the Apostle Paul. Okay. Somebody want to read Philippians, the fourth chapter? And in Philippians 4, let's begin reading in verse 18. He's writing to the Philippians.
Just 18, or 14 through 18?
14 through 18.
Yet it was good of you to share my troubles. Moreover, as you Philippians know, in the early days of your acquaintance with the gospel, when I set out in Macedonia, not one church shared with me in the matter of giving and receiving, except you only. For even when I was in Thessalonica, you sent me aid more than once when I was in need. Not that I desire your gifts. What I desire is that more be credited to your account. I have received full payment and have more than enough. I am amply supplied now that I have received from Epaphroditus the gifts you sent. They are a fragrant offering, an acceptable sacrifice, pleasing to God.
Okay. So the church that was sending funds to the apostle sent it by the hands of Epaphroditus. The point is that when the Philippians wanted to support Paul, they did it directly. They sent funds without sending them through an intermediary. Epaphroditus carried the money, but Epaphroditus had no authority to spend that money. Okay? Now, maybe they said to Epaphroditus, we're going to send you with funds for the Apostle Paul. You can use those funds to get there and to get back home, but the funds are for Paul. Okay, I don't know that for sure, but that does make some sense as I look at this. But multiple churches He says, I robbed other churches, more than just one, sent money to the apostle so that he could preach in Corinth. And the way that they did it was by sending it with a messenger. So there's no intermediate organization that took control of the funds between the donor church and the recipient. That's an important idea to remember when we think about a local autonomous church. It makes its own decisions. It carries out those decisions. Other churches may make the same decision, but there's no relationship between them. Okay? There's no restriction on donor individuals, but that's the way that the church did it. Now, sometimes as individuals, we decide we're going to support a work, and we can do it through an intermediate organization if we choose to do it that way. There is no restriction. I have, when I was preaching in Brookings, I was supported by a number of churches. This church was one that was helping to support me. I was also supported by a couple of individuals who chose to make a contribution. Some of them did so through an intermediary. Some did not. But individuals function differently than churches. Comments. You know, we've just gone through the Catholics having to elect a new pope. Theirs is a very hierarchical organization. No Catholic church exists separate and apart from that organization. Yeah, all the way down to, you know, the Catholic Church here in Eugene. It looks forever like they own the building where they worship. They don't. The Pope owns all Catholic property. Okay? They can't take out a loan if they wanted to. They have to go to the Vatican Bank, and the Vatican Bank will determine whether they can take out a loan or not. I can't say that about a lot of other churches, but I do know that the Crystal Cathedral that was built in Southern California, very famous church. If you've gone down there, you've probably seen it on television or you've seen it in one way or another. When they wanted to build the Crystal Cathedral, they were told that if you're going to build it, you must put this name on the outside of it, the Assembly of God. You must put that name on this building. And they refused, and the Assembly of God said, your loan is due right now, and they couldn't pay it. So they had to sell the building to somebody else. Yeah.
I was thinking that. We have used the word robbed, like we use the phrase give till you hurt.
Okay. You may be right. I've always said the phrase ought to be give till it feels good.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well,
and you know, I looked at Malachi, where Malachi has this conversation with the people, and the people said, We make our sacrifices. What drudgery it is to make these sacrifices. And Malachi said, it's drudgery because you give junk, basically. He says, give the best and it won't be drudgery anymore. Does it? It's an interesting thought. Yeah.
And I was looking for the verse that is also very confusing to me where that word is used, where I think it's Jesus that said that he considered it, that you consider it robbery, that he came from heaven, he robbed himself of heaven to be here on earth. So I was thinking that maybe the word robbery has kind of changed in terms of its use and meaning sort of in our culture. However, that the other verses that I kind of looked up here real quick, it's pretty consistent the way that it's used in where, you know, Christ was crucified between two robbers. I mean, that's pretty much the way we use the word, right?
Right.
So, and I can't find where that verse is. I've been looking for it and I can't find
it. It's Philippians. Why can't I remember where it is? Dean, you just taught Philippians. Where does it say?
It was in Corinthians.
That Jesus thought it not robbery to be equal with God.
Right.
It's in Philippians 2. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ, that's number 5, and then 6, who being in form of God did not consider it robbery to be equal with God.
That's the one I'm thinking.
Right. That's the passage that you're thinking about.
Yeah.
6.
That's another one that's kind of baffling for me in terms of the usage of that word. But I think it's consistent.
Well, robbery is taking something of value from somebody, and he didn't consider it robbery to leave
right.
the godhood.
Right. No, I understand. I understand the implications of that. I'm just trying to think of the word robbery.
Yeah.
Like Dean said, if you offered something that is worth something. You know, nobody worries if you lean over and pick up a tin can off of your property and they don't accuse you of stealing. But if you take something else that's of value, then it's robbery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was just thinking about that word robbery being used in terms of him taking from one church, because they freely gave it to him.
Right.
He didn't take it without their free will. They freely contributed that so that he could preach the gospel.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just an interesting use of that word.
Yeah, it is. Philippians 2 at verse 6 in the English Standard Version says, who though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped.
Yeah.
But he emptied himself, taking the form of a servant, being in the likeness of men, and being found in human form, he humbled himself, being obedient to the point of death, even the death on the cross. So, yeah, keep up, Mandy.
Thanks to dear Google. The phrase robbery can also be synonymously used as to be exploited, which would be in the case of Paul. He did not exploit those contributions from the churches. Or to be held onto, or to be grasped, which is that new international.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to think about the way, like we were saying, the idea that the definition has changed a bit over time.
Yeah. But the point that I'm trying to make with that particular analysis is there were multiple churches that supported the Apostle Paul. Each one of them did so on its own. They did not send the funds to an intermediary organization, and then that intermediary organization had the responsibility to make sure that the funds were administered in the way that they ought to be administered. Okay? And that's typically the way that things are done anymore. Especially in the religious community. We send our funds to a central organization and they take care of distributing those funds. Now, there are a lot of corollaries that go along with that. You know, sometimes we send funds to preachers in the Philippines and it's possible that they could misuse those funds. So we have a responsibility to oversee those funds to make sure that they're spent in the way that they should be spent. And it might be worthwhile to send one of our elders or somebody else to the Philippines to just check on the situation to see how those funds are being used. Yeah.
I know this is not the direction you want this verse to go, but he says, you fulfilled my need. They weren't saying Motel 6 isn't good enough. I need to stay at the Hilton and I need to have room service and I need. He was having his very basic needs that were not being met, and people loved him so much that they wanted to make sure he was taken care of.
Okay. So it was need, not excess. That's a good point. And sadly, and I think it turns off a lot of people, there are a lot of religious people who feel like they deserve excess instead of need. Can't remember the guy's name, but just recently, he publicly said that the church needed to provide his wife with a Ferrari because she needed a Ferrari. I don't remember who that was.
Was that Joel Osteen by any chance?
No, it wasn't Osteen. It was some preacher in Texas who was summarily rejected, and he was just put out of the pulpit.
There's electronic preachers out there everywhere.
Yeah. This guy was a preacher at one of the mega churches in Texas, and he said that his wife needed a Ferrari, and so.
Ferraris.
You don't need a Ferrari because you couldn't get in and out.
Oh, that's true.
We'll get you a Mazda. They're just as hard to get in and out of.
Cost a lot less.
Yeah, it cost a lot less. Okay. No church became an agent for another church in the New Testament. All churches have an equal responsibility to the work that they undertake. No church in the New Testament ever became the agent to take the responsibility to oversee the work that a lot of churches were doing. Okay? And again, that's pretty rare in the religious community that we're a part of. We have sponsoring churches that make sure that the funds are being used in the most appropriate way when we send funds to someone to preach. And it's generally speaking, a large church who says we will function as the agent. Other churches can send their contributions to us, and then we will distribute them on your behalf. But at that point, the control of the funds passes from this little church that wants to support the preaching of the gospel but only has $15 a month that they can send to do that work. They send their money to this large mega church that says, we will support the preaching of the gospel. We'll take your funds, we'll mingle them with our funds, and we'll support that the preaching of the gospel. That's unheard of in the New Testament. Okay? Now, it makes sense from a worldly perspective that you have somebody who's in charge of making sure that the funds are spent the way that you expect them to be spent. Somebody has to oversee the work that a preacher is doing in the Philippines or in Africa or in South America. Somebody has to oversee that work. And the argument is made that it would be prohibitively expensive for the church at Coburn Road to send $100 a month to a preacher in Africa and then spend $15,000 to fly somebody to Africa to check on the work to make sure that it's going the way that it should go. Okay? So it makes a lot of sense to pool the resources and then one person can be responsible for spending the funds and for overseeing the work. That makes sense, but it wasn't done that way in the New Testament. When Paul took the funds that had been gathered from other churches to Jerusalem or to Judea to relieve the famine that had made it impossible for churches to take care of all the needy people that were among them, he traveled with the funds from multiple churches, but he didn't have any responsibility for the funds. He didn't have the oversight of those funds. Church A sent money, Church B sent money, Church C sent money. Sometimes they appointed somebody to travel with Paul. Sometimes they didn't, and they just trusted Paul to get their money to Judea. But in any case, Paul or the messenger, Epaphroditus in the case of the church in Philippi, either Paul or the messenger didn't have the right to spend those funds. They didn't have any control. That control belonged to the church that sent the funds. Until the funds were given into the hands of the person that they were trying to support. Okay? Yeah, Carol.
And once they've given the money that was for the needy or for whatever, for that, they had no control over the money that's there. They could withdraw and not send any more money if they thought it was misspent. But at that point, they lose control of the money.
Right. They relinquish control when it's given to the person that's going to spend it.
They're just the messengers.
I'm sorry, say again?
The messengers.
Yeah, they were just messengers.
Delivery people.
Yeah. Yeah. And we run into problems like that. We sent funds to a preacher that we know in the Philippines who needed them for medical supplies. And the funds that we sent didn't make it to him because of some mail snafus and all of that. Apparently there were terrible floods and the check that we sent to him was so damaged when he finally got it, that none of the banks there would cash the check. So he sent the check back and asked us if we could replace the check. Now, would it have been better if we knew somebody in the Philippines that had the ability to receive funds? And we've done that as well when we have given to the folks in the Philippines to aid in typhoon recovery. We had people that we knew in the Philippines, so we sent them the money because it was easier to send it to an individual and tell that individual to then get it to the person that we were trying to send it to. So, again, we pooled our resources. A lot of different churches sent money to the same individual, just like a lot of different churches contributed and gave money to Paul to take to Jerusalem or to Judea. But Paul had no authority to spend the money. It wasn't his. Faye, you had a comment?
No.
Nope. Lenny?
We have to be cautious of doing it. Having a person in charge of our money for a need. Case in point, there was an individual in Caldwell, Idaho, that needed a brain operation. He had $20,000. So a letter was sent out to multiple churches. And we contribute to that. Once they hit $20,000, they sent a letter back to all the churches. We have enough money for this. Whereas we send to an individual in a foreign country, they will put it in their bank account till the next thing happens. And
yeah,
we have to be cautious of that.
Yeah, we have to be cautious. Okay. We have to maintain oversight. And, you know, this didn't happen when I was in Alaska, but in 1964, there was a terrible earthquake in Alaska. It just about wiped out Anchorage, and Anchorage was the only big city up there. Churches all over the United States sent stuff to Anchorage, to the church there, and said, we want you to use this to supply the needs that we know that you have. They sent so much stuff that they couldn't distribute it fast enough. So sometimes it's better to send money and let people buy the stuff that they need on the spot, because we wound up with the church in Anchorage wound up with blankets and tents and had no use for them. And, you know, you can't send it back. So sometimes money is better than stuff. But sometimes stuff works pretty well, too. You know, there are a lot of times when there's a natural disaster and it doesn't do any good to send money because there's nothing that they can buy. So in that case, you need to send stuff. It's just, it's not easy to know the difference. Yeah, Carol.
Some people don't know what needy stuff is and what isn't needy stuff. I mean, well, I've heard things of people sending prom dresses over and, you know, things that aren't essentials.
Yeah.
And just because, well, I've got this, I'll just box this fur coat up and send it to Africa because they're sure going to need it there.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
That kind of thing happens all the time. In, you know, we want to make a food donation to somebody who doesn't have food. And so we go through our pantry and we find cooked squash that we're never going to eat. And we donate that. Don't do that. That's just donating your offering. Okay, so there's, you know, there's a lot of reasons why money works better, but just something to think about. Okay, that completes what I wanted to talk about with the church. Any other comments, questions, anything that you'd like for us to discuss about the organization of the church? This is pretty rare. We have very few people that have joined us on Zoom this evening. Any questions, comments from folks on Zoom? Okay. If not, then we're going to ask Bob to come up and lead us in a song in just a minute. It's an opportunity for us to think about our relationship with God and to carefully consider what we can do individually and as a church to do the kinds of things that God wants us to be involved in. Jesus, meek and gentle.